welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hello, and welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here, of course, with Colleen Pilar. And this week, we're going to talk about growling. Is it something that you need to pay attention to? And if so, what do you do about it? I think it's important to start out with, though, is understanding what growling means and where it fits into a dog's behavior. It may be a normal behavior, but is this one that is serious or not serious? Or where does it fit into the behavior patterns we see in dogs? You want to address that, Colleen?
Sure. Growling is one of the behaviors that most owners are most aware of because it's a distinct change. And in the behavior continuum, you know, that we're always talking with people about, that behavior isn't set. It's not the same static thing every single time. That we will have our good moments and we will have our bad moments. And so we've talked before on the podcast about the continuum of the, like a traffic light. The, you know, green would be enjoyment. If you stopped, the dog would be like, come on, do it again. And then yellow would be tolerance. The dog is really not feeling it. So when you stop, they're like, okay, moving on. But they tolerated it. It was fine, but not necessarily good. And then red is the dog seeking to end the interaction. So that includes escape and avoidance, which is often missed. People don't recognize those pieces as part of the red. But it also includes any signs of aggression. And growling falls into that area. So the first thing we need to know when we're dealing with growling is that we've already missed our yellow zone.
Yes.
You know, that the yellow zone where we could have made our big changes, where we could have really tilted the situation back toward the good area, we missed stuff. And now we're in the bad spot.
Right.
And so that's a tricky thing. That said, I always like to tell people that growls are good.
I do,
growls
too.
Growls are warnings, and the polite response to a warning is, thank you for giving me time to address the situation.
Yes. You know,
that's what we want to be thinking of it as.
I always tell owners that I think it is an early warning system that you need to pay attention. When your dog growls, they are giving you an early warning that things are deteriorating rapidly for me, and it's a gift. It's a genuine gift to you.
Yes. And it is a communication. It is a way of saying,
absolutely,
in this relationship, I need you to know something. They're not just diving in and taking action, which some dogs will do. So we want to be really happy when a dog growls because they warned us. We do not want to be happy that they were so stressed they needed to growl. And so that's the sticky thing.
Right.
So it's like, yay, thank you for growling. Boo, I'm so sorry you were stressed enough that you were in
had
a situation where you felt the need to growl. Right.
Right. So it's one of those catch-22s. You know, we don't want to push our dogs to the point where they're growling. But if that happens, I'm so glad you growled rather than go directly to, okay, I'm going to bite you because I'm unhappy. When you're dealing with clients, what do you tell them if they relate to you that there was a situation, for example, we had some guests over and you were sitting in the living room and I had the dog with me and he wanted to leave, but everybody was, you know, blocking the exits from the room and he couldn't settle down. And finally somebody reached over to pet him to calm him down and he growled. What would you tell a client to do about a situation like that?
That's a really interesting one because it has a lot of the elements that we get in these common situations, the exit routes being blocked, that's such a common thing. I'm always saying we want to have at least two exit routes.
Absolutely.
Particularly with kid and dog interactions, because one of them is often blocked by a giant pirate ship or Lego construction or something. You want to have multiple ways of getting out. But the other piece that was interesting there is the person who reached down to pet the dog to calm them, that often the things that we are doing to dogs have such good intentions.
Right.
I'm helping you, and the dog is not receiving it the same way, and that it's an uncomfortable moment made more uncomfortable by someone adding an additional layer of stress to that. So I do, first off, I really want people to know their dog so that they can advocate for the dog and recognize early on, you know, this is a little tough for my dog. So we're going to have it short, we're going to have it easy, and we're going to have it over. But if we get into that situation, in the moment of the growl, we do whatever we can to diffuse the situation. Calm, move it out, you know, Let's keep it everything calm. I don't yell at the dog. I don't punish the dog. We don't want to do anything that escalates, that makes things more tense. Our goal, just like police officers, our goal is to calm the situation.
Yes, you want to diffuse it, not escalate it.
Indeed. So once that's happened, once you've diffused it, then you have to step back and evaluate, because if something bad happens once, odds are good it's going to happen again. So you need to look at, you know, what happened? Why was the dog stressed? What was going on? What were the things there? So what could we do to avoid this kind of situation in the future? And then that question has two pieces to it. Are there skills I could train my dog to help my dog cope better? And are there management strategies I could use to make the whole environment easier for my dog? Because if something happened once, pretty much in any part of your life that you didn't like, it is so worth the time to sit down and think about and go, well, that happened. What would I like to have happened instead? And how could I make sure that would be the way it goes in the future?
Right. I tell people, I said, the one thing I learned about parenting is that if something happened and I handled it incorrectly, there was pretty much 100% guarantee that I was going to get a second chance at that one. And even if I handled it correctly, there's pretty much a 95% chance I'm going to get another chance at that particular situation. So if it happened once, especially if it happens in your home, it's likely to happen again, and so you need to take a look at the dynamics. And I think it's really important to take a look at not just what happened, but maybe where it happened. Yes. Is there a particular, like in my kitchen, there's a big island. And so one of the things I'm always very conscious of is if the dog is in the kitchen and the kids are in the kitchen, how can she move to get away from them if she needs to? How, there are sometimes like, how can I move to get away from them if necessary? If they're going around and around the island and I'm trying to cook, it can be stressful for me too, because I don't want somebody bumping into me at the stove. So looking at your environment and how can you manage anybody, the kids, the dogs, the people in the environment is incredibly important, making sure that everybody has a safe way to move.
Right. And so when we were talking about the two escape routes, so around your island, you have an escape route to the left and an escape route to the right, but you have four grandchildren who live in that house.
I do.
Both of those escape routes could be blocked. So a person who is aware of managing is noticing that, is noticing, oh, I have a grandchild on this side and a grandchild on that side. How can I make the situation more comfortable for my dog? Which it doesn't necessarily mean it was an uncomfortable situation, but just always looking and being aware of those things.
So that it doesn't become uncomfortable.
Right.
I want to always have a way for her to move so that it doesn't become uncomfortable for her or me or my kid or my grandkids. And that's in my home. But, you know, it can be that way when you're outside too. I have a class I called Walking Granville. And what we do is we get together at certain parts of Granville, and I usually bring a dog, but I will sometimes won't have my clients bring dogs, and we learn to walk together through our little village, and we do lots of different routes, and we try different things. And one of the things I tell my owners always is that I don't care where you are, you need to have at least two escape routes. And one time we were on the corner near the Granville Inn. For those of you from Granville, you know right what I'm talking about. And across the street at the Buxton Inn, I could see around the corner was a couple with two dogs, and then somebody was coming, was going to turn the corner. So what they did was they could have done a couple of things with their dogs. They could have crossed the street. I could see them turning to tents. They could have turned and backed up, or they could have gone into the courtyard at the Buxton Inn. But instead, what they did is they stood smack dab in the middle of the sidewalk, held their dog's leashes really, really tight so the dog started to tense up even more. And as the people walked by, they pulled the dog back and the dogs barked and lunged at the person. Mm-hmm. That was a completely avoidable situation if they had just used one of their escape routes. So I stopped and we had watched this. And so I turned to my students. I said, all right, tell me three things they could have done differently. I said, you didn't know it was a quiz day, but it is. And bless their hearts, they came up with three things. One of them said he could have crossed the street. One of them said he could have turned around and backed up. And the other one, bless their heart, said he could have put a fistful of treats in that dog's nose and led him by the person rather than having the dog panic by watching the person. So I said, that's great, because you've covered the two things, not only a physical escape route, but they've also covered the idea of a mental escape route. So if you don't have a physical escape route, can you give a dog a mental one by putting a fistful of treats in their nose in order to disengage them from what's going on and have them follow those treats away? So that's another thing to remember, is that escape routes don't necessarily have to be physical. They can be mental as well.
I love the label of a mental escape route. It kind of, you know, brings to mind, like, when I go off to Tahiti in my head. But it's true that if we can distract the dog and give the dog something else to focus on, you know, our brains need a target. And so that dog's brain was very busy focusing on the other dogs. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And right. If we could have had a fistful of treats in his nose, he might have gone, oh, oh, my, a whole different reaction with his mental escape route. So that's a very cool way of thinking of it. I love that phrase.
Oh, thank you.
I also like the impromptu quiz in the middle of class. What are three things? But the reality is, that's an excellent example of, well, that happened, so now let's think about how could we have handled it. And that's, I swear, it's a life skill. You and I joke often that everything about dog training relates to life, but I believe it. I truly believe it, because that same question could happen with, you know, your teenager broke the curfew. Okay, well, what three things could we do differently next time? Or what three options? It comes up in every sort of course.
And so not only is dog training applicable to life, but I always find whenever something happens, somebody will say, well, I don't know. I said, well, in dog training, this is what we do.
Right.
So it is very applicable. So I think that you need to assess what happened. What was the environment in that caused, and was there some sort of interaction or movement around the dog that was very stressful to him? Is your dog sensitive to a particular way in which people approach him? In class last night, I was talking to two different owners, one of whom had a beagle and one of whom had a German Shepherd puppy, and both dogs flinch if you reach over their head, which is pretty common. And I said, that's why I teach Target to have the dog touch their nose to the hand. I call it Target. My daughter calls it touch. You can call it whatever you want. But anyway, because with the beagle, if he can put his nose on your hand, then people are more likely to scratch him under the chin. And we did that, and Josie was very responsive to me. And the same thing happened with the German Shepherd. So be careful. Know what is a stress signal for your dog and how people approach them. And see if you can help give somebody else something to do. Oh, you want to say hi to Rover? Put your hand down by your side. He'll come over and put his nose on your hand, and then you can scratch his chin, leaving the dog an escape route to back up. If the hand goes over the head, the dog feels very trapped at times.
Yeah. And being perfectly willing to back the dog up yourself if you feel like it should be. Because often when our dogs are in a stressful situation, we just hold our breath and go, I think this is going to work. I think so. I hope so. And that's we've all done it. I've done it. Because the dog is doing fine, and fine versus good is something I'm very, very conscious of when people are describing a dog's behavior. So whenever someone tells me their dog is fine with something, it usually indicates to me that the dog doesn't actually like it. So how is your dog when guests come over? Oh, he's fine. Whereas if your dog loves when guests come over, you say, oh, he's obnoxious. He's, you know, shoving at the door and he's so excited to see them, or, you know, he covers them with fur because he's just rubbing up against them. You don't use the word fine. You just don't.
That's always a buzzword for me. Somebody says fine, I'm always pursuing that a little bit further.
Yeah. So, but that happens in many situations where our dog is sort of in the yellow zone and we think, well, he's tolerating this pretty well. He's fine. And then something gets added. The person reaches over the dog's head, or someone comes too close when they have a bone, or some such thing happens. And we aren't sure what to do. So we freeze and we wait and we pray. And often it ends and it was fine, but it was a bad moment. And being aware of bad moments and making a plan for how not to have that moment happen again is really important. So growling is a piece of that. So your dog may growl in these situations. Your dog may say, hey, I'm having a problem here. And people often respond to growling as if it is the rudest thing a dog could say. As if it is, you know, absolutely awful vocabulary. And I think if we could really translate it to, hey, I'm having a problem here, that
would help. As opposed to telling somebody where they can go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so often interpreted as a direction to you, you know, you got to go get off my planet, as opposed to, hey, I'm having a problem here. A request for help.
Right. So, and I think if you can rephrase it and see it as a request for help, one, that stops, that usually unfreezes you. Yeah. If I'm feeling like he's saying back off, what do? I freeze. But if I see it as a warning signal, I'm really having a hard time here. Mom, I need some help. Then I'm much more likely to move into action. So I think we talked about that as do words matter in one of our last podcasts. And yes. I think this is one of those occasions where words really matter how you describe this, because it's going to make a difference in how you act. And actually, we would like you to prefer, we would prefer that you use prevention as opposed to reaction, but reaction is going to happen.
Right.
Because the first time your dog growls in a situation that you don't realize he's going to growl, that's right. a time when you're going to react. But part of that will be, too, have you been paying close attention to his stress signals? Did he stop having a loose and wiggly body? Did he start to shut down? Did he close his mouth? Did he furrow his brow? Are his ears pinched against his head? Mm-hmm. You know, are his hackles coming up on his back? These are all signs that we are moving from enjoying into tolerating and pretty close to enough already, especially when you get an accumulation of these things. And I think the other thing to remember with growling is that bites are often preceded by growling and stiffening or freezing of your dogs.
Yeah.
So you need to pay attention to what's being added to the growling.
Yes. So that whole piece of that we can't always anticipate what the dog might growl about reminds me of a story you started telling me the other day about the dog who – when the children – there were in that family, the children were crawling.
Yes.
And the dog went, this is weird, but they were big kids. So the dog was like, they're supposed to walk on 2 feet. That was an uncomfortable moment. The adult in the house hadn't predicted that that would be a reaction.
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah. What happened was she had a gate up. The dog was on one side of the gate, and the kids were on the other side of the gate. The kids started crawling by the gate, and the dog perked right up and moved towards the gate and was – she didn't growl, but she did bark, and she kind of lunged, and she didn't go through the gate, but it was a reaction she had not anticipated. So we talked about how can we manage this, knowing that for whatever reason, whether she sees the kids as prey that way because of the crawling or whatever, what are some management strategies she can use? So one of the things, I was glad the gate was up. I said, if the kids want to play, put her someplace, and you know they want to play dog or they want to crawl, make sure there is a gate between them. Or put her in her crate with a chew toy or something along that line. And also be ready with some treats so that the next time they crawl, you can divert her, once again, that mental diversion, with some treats. So that's one of the things is just to keep aware of is this, remove her from the situation. If you see the kid starting to crawl, before she has a chance to react, get her outside, get her upstairs, get her someplace. If she does start to react, try to redirect her back to you. But it was one of those things that also, too, make sure that she and the kids both have escape routes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is just tell your kids to stand up for at least a minute. Just stand up. Stop crawling so I can get the dog settled, and then you can play all you want. So.
Right. And that doesn't mean that the dog won't ever get used to crawling. It's that whole socialization piece.
Right.
This is what I expect behavior to look like, and this is what happened, and these don't match, so therefore it's bad. If it's not what I've seen before, it's probably bad, which we do too. Humans do that too. But dogs definitely do it. Adult dogs go, something is different, probably not good. So that's definitely a circumstance of that. Growling, we said, is a lovely little warning system, but there are dogs who bite without growling.
Absolutely.
And that is the worst. They give other signals, but often their signals are subtle, and very frequently their signals are fast.
Yes.
Where they go from little uncomfortable to very uncomfortable to boop, bitcha. And that's a big problem. But one of the ways we can accidentally get rid of growling is by punishing dogs for growling.
Right, right.
So don't you growl at me. The dog learns, oh, I'm having a real big problem, but nobody wants to hear about it. I better keep my mouth shut because I get punished if I growl. If I tell anyone that I'm having a problem, I'm going to be punished. So I'm just going to have to deal with the situation on my own. I have no backup. And that's where we get the bites without warning. And it's a really difficult thing because it's hard. Some dogs can, but many dogs won't ever get the growl back. Even if we try to do things to help the dog feel safer and more secure, this dog may for the rest of its life be a dog who isn't going to growl in an uncomfortable situation.
Right.
And so we have fewer warnings, and that's bad.
Right. And the other thing we can do is we can actually push the dog to escalate in behavior. We can actually teach them to growl and to bite by punishing them for things like, for example, if your dog brings a stick in from outside and you just take the stick away and throw it away without giving the dog something in return. It's kind of like, but I really kind of like that stick. Instead, you just took it away. So next time you come in, I'm going to turn away from you. So you rip the stick away from me, and I kind of really like that stick. Maybe the next time we slink in and mm-hmm. we freeze when you come near me. Fourth time, I actually growl at you when you come near me to take my stick. And the fifth time, I might actually lunge at you. Instead, that could really be, the whole situation could be avoided by teaching your dog to trade things. Oh, you have a stick. That's so cool. It's an outdoor toy. Here, have a cookie. And we're going to take the stick outside. And just by trading, you can teach your dog to be comfortable around you and not fear that bad things are going to happen to me. And all I really want to do is bring my stick inside.
Right.
So
building a relationship as opposed to deteriorating the relationship with
right.
that.
And it kind of goes the same way, is that then if the dog growls, when you punish it, it's kind of like, okay, you're right. Nobody's listening to me. I guess maybe I'm going to have to escalate to the next level to let you know how uncomfortable I am because this isn't working for me.
Yeah. And when you realize something isn't working, you stop using it, you know, right. So that if every time I have a problem, I go, I have a problem. And someone comes running, then I can continue for my entire life going, I have a problem. But if I do that and nothing happens, and then eventually I'm like, hey, I got a problem over here. The next day when I have a problem, I'm not going to probably start with, I'm going to go, hey. So that
absolutely.
Comes into play that we don't typically scale back down. Once we decided this level doesn't work, I need to go to this level. We start at that level in the future.
Absolutely. But people do it too.
Yeah. Definitely people do it. People, again, dog training, people, we're all the same.
Yeah.
The question about the stick, though, brings up an interesting tangent, which is lots of dogs growl when they have a toy. So your
right.
dog has a tug toy and you grab the other end and the dog's rrr. Should you be worried then?
That's a really great question. And my own feeling on that is you need to take a look at the whole dog. If you're playing tug with your dog and the body's really loose and our ears are soft and our eyes are soft and we're playing and we're having a good time and when you stop tugging, the growling ends and there's no aggressive act afterwards. It's just like, oh, that was a great game. Thanks, Mom. Then it's probably not something to worry about because this is just part and parcel of toy. And it actually is going to sound different. I have found that when my dogs growl when playing, it's, you know, it's a higher pitched. It's not quite as threatening. When a dog threatens me with a growl, it's low and rumbly and the hair stand up on the back of my neck. So there's a different sound to it as well. But that my caveat on all that is if you have any doubts about this growling. If you're unsure, if you're like, he growls when we play, but I don't know. If it makes you uncomfortable at all, I would suggest that you take it seriously and stop mm-hmm. the activity that causes the growling and talk to a trainer so you can tease out what's actually going on. Because the ramifications are quite serious. If the growling is serious and it means something and you don't address it appropriately, you can cause some very serious consequences. If, however, it's not serious growling and it is just fun and you still take it seriously, you're not going to cause any damage to the dog or to
right.
your relationship with the dog. So in the case of growling, this is one instance where unless you're sure that this is play growling and it has all the signs of play growling and it stops when we end in play and everybody's happy and loose and find somebody who can help you tease it apart. And can mm-hmm. teach you how to manage it and whether or not this is something that is serious or not. So, yeah, growling when playing can be fun, but you need to be careful of it, too, that it doesn't. Because the other thing that can happen, too, is that dogs can escalate in playing. that dogs, yes, some dogs go from 0 to 60 in arousal. This is not fear or aggression, but just in arousal. They get really amped up, and it can go very quickly. And the problem,
and arousal and aggression are linked.
They
are. Absolutely a link between arousal and aggression. So you make poor choices when you're extremely aroused. So that's where we get some spillover.
Right. And so if your dog is highly aroused and you've been playing and then he suddenly starts growling when you're playing, that's mm-hmm. time to tone things down a little bit. One of the things that I suggest with people is that, for example, if your dog gets really revved up when you're playing fetch, make him sit between every toss of the ball. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that little pause in running or in that kind of behavior will help to keep your dog below the arousal level that will spill over into aggression. And if you find your dog really starting to amp up, then stop play. One thing about play with dogs is that it should be self-regulating between dogs. And if your dog doesn't know how to self-regulate the play, you need to help him by breaking play up. Stopping, taking a breath, everybody have a treat, we all calm down, and then we play again. And you can break play up. I remember with puppy parties sometimes, I will, depending on the nature of the puppies, I'm breaking play up between them maybe 30 seconds to every 10 minutes.
Yeah, so I'd rather. Depends on the group.
It depends on the group, and it depends on your dog. If your dog's revving up real quickly, then break up, then stop play. Do some interrupting in that play to make sure that that arousal doesn't spill over into aggression. And so maybe we don't start growling.
So growling in general is something that I strongly recommend you talk to a trainer about. If you're sure it's play growl, you're fine. But if you're not sure it's play growling, or if you absolutely believe this is serious growling, definitely talk to a trainer, because there are usually lots of simple things we can do to make situations better that maybe won't cure everything, but can probably look at, you know, the locations, the interactions, the ways we can – strategies that we could use, and also things that you can train your dog to help the dog feel more comfortable. So finding a good positive reinforcement trainer to help you with growling is imperative, I think, because, again, if we're looking at our red, yellow, green, we missed all our yellows. If we're at growling, we need to learn to recognize the yellows. We need to learn to be able to intervene – I always tell people, intervene early and often. You know, you have to know what to look for and when to intervene. And I don't think most of us know what to look for. I think that that's a learning curve, and we all have to keep developing that skill. But the culture is getting better at learning dog body language.
I agree.
I don't think any of us were taught any of this as children, anyone who's an adult now. I think our kids are being taught it much more. So
I agree.
Hopefully we're, you know. Family Paws calls it raising dog-aware generations. And I think that that's a really amazing way of looking at it. Like, if we could start kids young understanding how to interpret and read dog body language, they're going to be much better advocates for their dogs. They're going to see the yellow zone.
I agree.
And the yellow zone's where it's at.
It is, because you don't want to get to the growling phase. You don't want to get to the point where the dog is really ready to spill over into something bigger and having to give you that warning signal, I really, really, really need help.
Yeah.
So
trainers can help with that.
Absolutely. And they can help you, like I said, teaching target, being aware of escape routes, knowing when growling is serious and not serious. These are all incredibly important things in order to make family dogs terrific. So you can really love living with your dog, which is, of course, what we all really want. That's the goal.
Yes. We want everyone to think living with a dog is just the best thing ever.
That's right. All right. Well, I think that pretty much sums it up. We'll have some links on the website to your continuum, your red, yellow, and green continuum, which I think is a really terrific graphic. And once again, I think we'll have some links to how to get to trainers through either APDT, PG,
IABC.
Yeah.
All those things.
Put
the links in there.
All right. Well, thanks, Colleen. That was terrific.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
Have you visited our website lately? In addition to our previous episodes, we also have a list of resources that you and your dog may enjoy. Check it out at yourfamilydogpodcast.com.